strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Appreciate you spending some time with the show. Last night, the only televised gubernatorial debate was held with the GOP candidates. Four of them were on the dais last night, and a lot of opinions about what happened last night. One of those candidates was Karen Taylor Robeson. She joins us now. Mrs. Robeson, welcome back to the show. Out of the gate, your opinions of the debate last night.
Well, thank you, Mike, for having me on. I feel very good about my performance, especially knowing it was kind of a home game for Carrie Lake, who spent her entire career on television. But, you know, when you strip away the kind of the circus atmosphere, if you will, a roller derby atmosphere, and the name-calling and noise, I think I was the only candidate on the stage that had detailed knowledge and plans for the greatest challenges our state faces, like water and inflation and education. I feel good about the outcome.
Do you think that the voters in Arizona, that are, the ones that will be voting in the Republican primary, do you think that they got information yesterday or last night that was useful, or do you think the way the debate went kind of distracted from the usefulness of the information that was out there?
You know, I think there was a lot of distraction, but you know, over the course of this campaign, I've been at, I think, 8 or 9 forums now with most of the other candidates, but it's clear, you know, Carrie Lake won't show up at these forums because she doesn't want to have to debate the real issues. You know, she has one issue, that's her focus, but Arizona is facing we have significant challenges, you know, water, education, immigration issues. And so all the candidates that you saw there last night, other than Carrie Lake, have been at these forums. And so we've had, you know, multiple opportunities to reach voters across the state in various forums. And I hope we will continue to have more forums. It's just unfortunate that the televised one turned into a bit of a ruckus.
Let's talk about a couple of issues that have grown in importance since the last time we've talked. With the ending of Roe v. Wade at the federal level, sending it back to the states, we now have our attorney general saying that we will default back to a 1901 law. Do you think we should be going back to a 1901 law, or what should be done? And if you're governor, what can be done with the abortion laws or, you know, here in Arizona?
Well, as you know, and as I've said many times, I am pro-life. I always have been. I always will be. And, you know, a lot has transpired in 50 years. And, you know, we've learned a lot. That's one of the reasons why I think, you know, the legislation and laws you're seeing around this country are further protecting the unborn, in particular when we now know that they feel pain at much earlier ages in the womb. And so I think we have to take that into consideration. We have to take, you know, all sorts of considerations into account. You know, I've also said that we have to be mindful of the women and take care of the women. Care as much about the women walking into a clinic as we do about her unborn child. We must do that. I think times call for that. But I am, you know, thrilled with the Supreme Court's ruling, because it now is where it belongs, and that is in the hands of the people and elected democracy, not unelected judges.
Karen Taylor Robeson, gubernatorial candidate in the GOP primary, is joining us. The other issue that's come to light this morning with the Supreme Court decision saying that the president has the right to end the Remain in Mexico policy has now made the border issue, especially in states like Arizona on the border, it is going to affect us dramatically. In light of what's happened, is there anything now that you believe needs to be done more, or what is your border policy, and does anything change based on what the Supreme Court said today?
Well, I certainly don't like the outcome, but I respect the outcome of the Supreme Court in their decision. Now it is, you know, obviously up to Joe Biden, but I'm not going to hold my breath, because I think his border policy is working just as he would like it, which means open borders. And that is a disaster for Arizona. Arizona is on the front lines. I'm actually headed back to the border today, and we have to be prepared for the surge. The federal government is not our friend in this case, and you know, we just have to figure out how we can protect the people and property in Arizona. And that means sending resources to our local law enforcement down there. This legislature and governor has sent some resources down there, but we will send all the resources we need to protect the people and property of the state of Arizona.
And that was my more toward in line of what the question is, because we had Arizona's Morning News had Sheriff Daniels on this morning, and he was talking about arresting the same human smuggler twice in one night, and how many successful runs they have, and that he believes that this is now going to be catch and release even for these smugglers. Do we need to even add more resources to what we send to the border?
Yes.
When let's talk about one more issue before I let you go, and that issue is the economy here in Arizona. We've talked about this before. Arizona has is said to be positioned much better, even in case of a recession, to survive and to thrive more. What needs to happen in Arizona to take it to the next level? What changes or what additions need to happen in our economy for security for our working people in Arizona?
Well, it is true. Our economy is far more resilient today than it was in 2008 after the last recession. The governor and many, many people working together, the legislature, the Arizona Commerce Authority, has done a great job finding that we and the next recession, which is coming, and we may already be in it. But I believe we have to continue a business environment that allows every business to succeed, large or small. I said it on the debate last night. I want Arizona to be the small business capital of America, and that means a low-tax, low-regulatory environment. And when I'm governor, that's exactly what we will do. We will remove impediments to the formation of businesses. Every business starts as a small business, and we have to do everything we can to support small businesses.
I always appreciate some time when you can come on the show with us. Tell people where they can find you and learn more about your campaign.
Thank you. They can go to my website, KarenForArizona.com. That's K-A-R-R-I-N for Arizona.com.
As always, it's a pleasure. Look forward to having you on again.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. That's Karen Taylor Robeson, candidate for governor. That debate was something else. We're going to talk. I think we're going to spend a little time talking about that debate later on this morning. I just wish that the citizens of Arizona would have gotten a performance from all the candidates that was more substantive and less of a shouting match and argument. And, you know, when you blame one person for starting the argument, I don't necessarily think that's true. It got adversarial fairly quickly, talking over each other. I wouldn't say it was completely disrespectful, but I do think that it was a lot less about the audience, and I wish it had been more about the audience. And so we're going to talk more as the morning goes on, because the voters in Arizona have a very important decision to make. Republicans have candidates to choose from, and then the state of Arizona, including a huge number of independent voters, are going to have to choose our leadership for the next 4 years in six very important races. Five of them are state offices, one for the U.S. Senate and Mark Kelly's seat. And I think the more information, the better. Go to KTAR.com/Arizona votes. You can go to that page. It's a landing page for the interviews we've done with candidates, not just on this show, but on others, so you can be an informed voter and learn more. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about violent crime, gun ownership, and gun crimes. All that's coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
There is a lot of changes that are happening in our country. The Supreme Court handing down decisions that have changed things and have amped up the conversations about things. In response to what happened in Uvalde, Texas, and then we had a Supreme Court decision that came out after that in a completely different case that had to do with concealed carry permits. The country's arguing about firearms again, but the way people are behaving is irrational. And let me give you an example. In California, somebody leaked the information of people that were applying for concealed carry permits. This was between the years of 2011 and 2021, so a 10-year span. The private information of gun owners that were applying for concealed carry permits. It included the names, the date of birth, the gender, their race, and their driver's license numbers, addresses, criminal history of all of these people. And it was leaked by somebody in the department in California. Thousands of civilians, including 244 judges and 420 reserve officers, had their information exposed. And it was done intentionally. in that department to expose people in California applying for concealed carry permits. I want to go, there's, you know, headlines, skyrocketing Chicago crime as small businesses and corporations packing their bags saying enough is enough. A New York City woman was pushing a baby stroller in the Upper East Side, was shot dead at point blank range. Suspect is at large. They identified the suspect and the officer involved shooting in Mesa the other day, where the Mesa police saw a guy crossing five lanes of traffic and went to make contact with him. He ignored the officers. They told him to sit. He wouldn't sit. He got into a crouched or a squatting position, stood up and pulled a gun from his waistband, shot around into the ground, was shot by police. He's been identified. And so we are seeing crime on the rise in many places and violent crime on the rise. Now, here was an interesting study, and I think this is something, if we're going to have a reasonable conversation about things and look at data, some of these things are important. This is a quote from a George Mason University professor named Emerita Joyce Lee. Malcolm: gun ownership is higher in states with fewer restrictions, which makes sense. If you're a less restrictive state with gun laws, you have higher levels of gun ownership, according to this study. Fewer restrictions has higher gun ownership, and homicide rates in these states are lower. People can protect themselves. She pointed out in the study that burglars from 1986 that found 34% of burglars interviewed reported to having been scared off, shot at, wounded, or captured by armed victims. When you look at the population rate, the FBI data from 2019 detailing murders and gun murders per 100,000 people for most states, as well as assembled the RAND Corporation data released in 2020 showing the percentage of households with at least one firearm in 2016. So it said it doesn't what this data showed them, that many states with higher percentages of gun ownership had lower or similar murder and gun murder rates to states with stricter gun control. Montana and Wyoming came in top spot for states with the highest percentage of gun ownership, with more than 66% of households with at least one firearm. However, the states also saw murder and gun murder rates similar to states with more strict gun laws. So gun ownership, legal gun ownership, does not lead to a rise in crime and gun crimes. So when you take guns out of people's hands, you make them less safe. You don't make the community safer. And I think this is an important conversation. We are focusing on legal gun owners. We are making it more difficult for people to get guns legally. We are not doing anything to make it harder to get guns illegally. We are not punishing people. You know, the pendulum swings in conversations. I think yesterday we were talking about this. The pendulum has swung in the 1990s with the three-strike law that Americans were sick and tired of career criminals that were continuing to prey on people in our country. So the three-strike law was enacted, and it was a statute that put a lot of people in prison for a very long time. But what ended up happening was we saw that a lot of those people, in the minds of some, weren't dangerous. They weren't violent criminals. So there were criminals that were being put in prison in the minds of some for crimes that really didn't warrant lifetime in prison. So what did we do? We swung the pendulum completely in the other direction, and we've then now got the defund the police movement that's been out there. And now we're looking at this and saying, wait a minute. And I listed them yesterday. When the police officers in Phoenix have been shot, every single incident in Phoenix recently, and I'm sure more than recently, that has involved an officer being shot in the line of duty, it was the perpetrator or perpetrators were violent felons with long criminal histories that had no business owning firearms. That's where our focus needs to be. In one area, these spree killers, these mass killers, these shooters on school campuses, usually young men with a history of violent mental illness. People were afraid of them. Families were afraid of them. Some of them had been kicked out of school because of their behavior and told, don't come back until you get some mental health care. So that's the other focus, is how do we intervene early in someone's life when they're exhibiting signs of dangerous behavior and intervening before they become violent? I've mentioned before, I've talked about Steve Hooper. He's been on the show a number of times, and he has a company, Tripwire. He has a company that it focuses on security. Steve spent over 30 years with the FBI, was the head of the Joint Terrorism Task Force here. His wife spent over 25 years with the FBI. They're people that know what they're talking about. And one of the key things that he talks about in security is threat ownership. And in threat, you have to have someone that is in charge of gathering the intelligence on the threat that someone poses. In a school setting, is there a student that is saying things that other students are hearing that are dangerous, or it seemed that they could be dangerous, making threats against people, making threats online? And that one person at that school, whoever it is, whoever is designated for this, keeps track. And when one student says, I want you to look at this post, this is what so-and-so is saying on social media, and then another student is telling someone else, at lunch the other day, this kid threatened to shoot me in the parking lot. And you start to see a pattern of behavior. And then you know there is a threat here, or at least potential here. What do we need to do? What and when do we intervene here on some level before? The Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting that happened in South Florida, there were children that were interviewed after it was over, and there were kids that were saying, we always used to joke and say, if it ever happens at our school, we know who it's going to be, and it's that kid. There's a step in the direction of stopping these things from happening. It's not about taking away the rights of legal gun owners. In a moment, there are very few Americans who don't think the economy is getting worse. We give you an inflation update next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, if you haven't subscribed to the Mike Broomhead Show podcast, please do it. It's very simple to do on any device that you happen to have. Never miss a minute of the show, and you can listen at your convenience. The Mike Broomhead Show podcast this week brought to you by King LASIK and K2 Vision RLE, the best vision for the valley. With vision solutions for any stage of life, schedule your free virtual consult at kingk2vision.com. Okay, the economy of the United States. I want you to hear a couple of things. I've been talking about intent and doing things intentionally, and we all should. We should be intentional in how we do things. I am a terrible planner, but when I do plan things, things usually work out better. Make a plan. What do they say? Work the plan. Plan the work and work the plan is what you should do. But there is intent. Every president has an agenda, whether it was, George H.W. Bush and 1,000 Points of Light and a kinder, gentler. There's an agenda when presidents take office. I have made the claim that this president, his intent and the direction he goes has everything to do with climate change. Every decision they make, no matter what's happening in the world, is about climate change. So one of his advisors, Gina McCarthy, this week was doing an interview, and I want you to hear her talk about fossil fuel jobs.
We have opportunities now to transfer to clean energy in a way that grows thousands of jobs. Mm-hmm. We just had a recent report that was put out that's showing all of the energy and the employment stats from last year. Clean energy is winning. Fossil fuels losing jobs. We're gaining them every step of the way.
So she's bragging about how the fossil fuel industry is losing jobs. This is an intentional move. The president saying we are in transition. Now, I do not believe, and I want to be clear, I don't agree with the policies, but they are intentional. I don't believe that the president believes he's doing the wrong thing for the country. I don't think he's intentionally trying to ruin America or ruin the middle class. I think what he's trying to do is ruin the fossil fuel industry. That was a goal, to take us down the road of what we would call alternative fuels. They would say renewable fuels. which is fine to go in a direction. But if you're going to do it at the expense of the American people, if you're going to do it at the expense of the American economy, you are going to have the vast majority of Americans disagree with you. And now adding on top of that, we're going to go, let's add to the next level. They are not slowing down their agenda. It doesn't matter what's going on with fuel prices. Here is climate czar John Kerry. Now the next thing we need to transition to.
The ocean is a source of climate solutions, and they can help to keep the 1.5 degrees target alive. For example, we need to spur the transition to green shipping. If shipping were a nation, shipping would be the eighth largest emitter in the world. In May, the United States and Norway announced a green shipping challenge for COP27 to help put that sector on a pathway towards full decarbonization no later than 2050.
So now we're going to go to green shipping. That's where we're moving in that direction. I will tell you that the idea that you are reducing anyone's need right now for fossil fuel is not true. That's where the problem lies. We have not reduced our need for fossil fuels, but what we are doing is reducing our capabilities of producing them. That's where the prices are. He was told by Macron at this G7 summit they just had that you're looking at the Saudis, you're looking at the UAE, you're looking at OPEC, you're looking at these countries that are already at almost maximum production ability, that they're not going to be able to produce more. The economic confidence has crashed. 85% of Americans say that our economy is getting worse. Half of U.S. consumers are living paycheck to paycheck. Yeah, how dangerous that is for a family to live paycheck to paycheck. You are one mistake. You are one accident. You are one illness away from financial destruction. Half of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, according to this. Grocery cart inflation jumps to the highest in 22 years. What is happening here is crazy. And it is amazing that we are watching America go in this direction when we could never have imagined this just 2 years ago. You know, it is when I say intentional, I mean, it is intentional. The president doesn't believe he's ruining America. He believes he's saving the world. And there are some people that agree with him, and he's going to maintain their support. But it isn't just affecting fuel prices. We're going to talk in a moment, in a few minutes anyway, about the Supreme Court decision that dealt a blow to his climate agenda. And his staff at the EPA talking about how they're going to do it anyway, or they're going to move in that direction anyway. There is nothing stopping this march. And, then giving them the full benefit of the doubt, the president was talking about high gas prices and high food prices. I want you to hear this because it's the blame game again. Who is the president continuing to blame for what is happening here in America?
Ultimately, the reason why gas prices are up is because of Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. The reason why the food crisis exists is because of Russia. Russia not allowing grain to get out of Ukraine.
So I would say, isn't it interesting that a country the size of Russia, with the minimal power they have, they are a glorified gas station, that's what their economy is controlling the world's economy like this, that everybody in the world is going through this recession because of them. So giving them the benefit of the doubt and acknowledging that what is happening in Russia, between Russia and Ukraine, has caused a jump in fuel prices. It absolutely has. There's no doubt. But anybody that's watching realizes our inflation and our gas prices were skyrocketing before that ever happened. So I will say again, our policies needed to change. When Russia invaded Ukraine and you saw this huge jump, did they change their energy policy? Did they change their policy toward the fossil fuel industry in America? Have they made one policy shift to make it easier for the fossil fuel industry to exist and thrive in America at a time where there's a reduction because of what's happened in Russia? And the answer is they have not. Their policies have remained exactly the same every step of the way. And we're going to talk in a few moments about this because of what's happening with the EPA. They are targeting even more in the fossil fuel industry moving forward. They are not stopping the assault on the industry, no matter what is happening in the world's economy. That's what's happening. In a moment, we're going to talk about that because the Supreme Court handed down another decision, this one dealing a blow to the Biden administration and their climate agenda. I'll give you details coming up in a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, the Independence Day holiday weekend is the slowest time of the summer for blood donations. And if you'd like to be able to help out, you can. By Talent Saving Arizona Blood Drive is going to start on Saturday, July 2nd at 8 to 1 at Gila River Arena. And on Sunday, on July 3rd, 7 a.m. to 1 at Tempe Center for the Arts. Go to our contest page, KTAR.com, and you can make an appointment there. I want you to hear a little bit of an ABC report. The SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, handed down a ruling about the EPA, and many are calling it a serious blow to the climate agenda of the Biden administration.
This is devastating to climate advocates, especially the Biden administration, who had made the climate agenda a centerpiece of this White House. They want to roll back emissions in this country, a leading driver of global climate change. And this is a huge win for the coal industry and those communities that support it. I spent a lot of time ahead of this case in Appalachia, coincidentally one of the communities hardest hit by the impacts of climate change, but they're very resistant to these sorts of regulations. 1.7 million jobs in that industry and related industries.
So they are very concerned about this. Well, this is a story. Leading Biden officials outline their methods to keep pushing the administration's climate agenda if the Supreme Court limits the power of the EPA on Wednesday. So during a panel, they were talking about this. EPA Administrator Michael Reagan promised to deploy a suite of tools, including Clean Air Act, to regulate the power sector, regardless of the Supreme Court's coming ruling. They said, we have all these regulations we can present to the power sector in one fell swoop. The transition to green energy is not going to live and die by the Supreme Court's decision tomorrow. That's a quote from the White House climate advisor, Gina McCarthy, the same person we heard just a few moments ago bragging about how green jobs are on the rise and how fossil fuel jobs are diminishing, they're losing jobs. This is an issue that I've been talking about for such a long time, about the intention of this administration. Wouldn't it make sense? I think it does make sense for all of us that if we can find a better way to do things, we should. I mean, we always do. We make progress in so many parts in our world. If it makes sense for the planet and it makes sense for the American people and the world to go to a fuel source like solar or wind or electricity, if it makes sense to do that, the world will do that on its own. But in the meantime, until we get there, what do we do? And it's an important question, because we are not, for at least the next couple of years, there is nothing that's going to change. There's going to be executive orders. The EPA is going to put out directives. But this is what this story, we're talking about the Biden's EPA has America's biggest oil field in its regulatory crosshairs. The Environmental Protection Agency is considering labeling the United States' largest oil field in violation of ozone pollution standards, threatening drilling operations in the region. Now, what does this matter? Other than me talking politics, the proposed regulation takes aim at the Permian Basin, the largest oil field in the United States, accounting for 95 million gallons of gasoline per day. That's 40% of the oil produced domestically, according to the governor's office in Texas. So even as Americans are struggling with $5 gas and record-breaking inflation, Team Biden continues to double down on their political comments to end all fossil fuels. So this is intentional, and the American people have to decide whether or not it's the right direction to go. I've talked about how practically it can't be done the way they want to do it in the time frame they're saying that they're going to do it. And you don't have to be a genius. I worked as an electrical contractor. I was in that industry for over 20 years, most of it here in the Valley, building buildings and big and small, working on small projects, working on major projects. And you look at, again, multifamily dwellings. You look at the apartment complexes that are going up, the condominium complexes that are going up here. How in the world do you want to move to electric vehicles and charge those vehicles in places where they don't have the capability electrically in the privately owned buildings. They don't have the capability of expansion. Let's say you are a company that owns apartment complexes and you think going green is the best idea in the world. And so you want to convert your apartment complexes so that anybody that owns an electric vehicle has a charging station. So you're going to figure 50%. And you want to put charging stations in for half of the apartments in your complex. Good luck. The expansion you're going to have to make to your capability is immense. It just can't be done. Anything can be done. It can't be done quickly. Now you're going to talk about what we're putting onto the electrical grid. We are hearing people say, not just in Arizona, especially in Texas, but in Arizona and other places where we have this enormous heat wave coming, people are being warned to watch how much electricity they use. The electric grid is always called into question. Do we have enough? With the growth that's happening in Arizona, do we have enough? Well, how are we producing that electricity? We've got one nuclear power plant, but most of that goes to California. We produce with electricity at the Hoover Dam. We know that that happens. But we use fossil fuels to produce oil or to produce electricity. We use fossil fuels. So how are you going to produce that electricity that's needed? How are you going to update the grid in time? Never mind, how are you going to put these resources in? In these rural areas, how do you do it? It doesn't make sense. It makes sense to want to do something better. It doesn't make sense to say what they're saying. Already start killing the fossil fuel industry while you're not even close to making up the difference with electricity being made by, with electric vehicles. It's just not possible. So I think for the next couple of years, we are going to see this continue. And it's a shame that it's happening the way it is because, most people are fine with, I think Teslas are great vehicles. I love the Ford electric truck, the Lightning. I love the products that other manufacturers are coming up with. And I think they're cool. I think it's a great option for people. But when you're forcing it down people's throats and you are busting the American economy with gas prices as high as they are with no end in sight, then you deny you're doing anything. You're losing people. You're losing people. Coming up just after 10 o'clock, another candidate conversation. We talked to Adrian Fontes, a Democrat that is running for the Secretary of State's office. We're going to talk with him coming up in just a couple of moments.